Hello and welcome back to Bendability with me, the Splits Wizard, Emmett Lewis. In this week's episode, we are going to be talking about my speciality, the splits. Though, you know, I'd really actually consider backbending and other stuff in bridge-related terms to be my true speciality in terms of what we're very, very good at. But alas, the name has been stuck. So, generally a bit of housekeeping. Once again, thank you all for your reviews, your comments, your feedback. It's awesome to get this. It's really cool. Thanks for the comments on YouTube. Thanks for the messages off everyone. Keep them coming in to me. You know, send me questions, send me topics you might like me to cover. I am collating them, putting them together. So, where did the name Splits Wizard came from? The Splits Wizard came from... it came from some friends of mine, or friends now, but they were clients back in the day in Dublin, who they were all pole dancers, and it became kind of known that people who were struggling with their splits and other stuff would go, oh, there's a guy who's doing classes and teaching at the time, wasn't really teaching online at this time, who can help with splits. So it kind of got the nickname like, oh, have you seen the wizard? Off to see the wizard. And then it finally trickled back to me. And so that's where it came from. And then I decided, you know, fuck it, why not be a wizard? Being a wizard is awesome. It's much cooler than not being a wizard. Anyway, where am I? So, yeah, there's going to be a bit of a vaguer episode in terms of what I'm talking about, because I want to get some terminology across, some vague concepts, and then over later in the season, I'm going to go through all the splits themselves and put it together, all the splits individually, and talk about more refined technical details and some protocols and stuff like that. But today we're just going to talk about the splits. So the splits are kind of interesting because there's no fixed terminology. Well, there is and there isn't. So splits can be go like splitting your legs apart, spreading your legs apart. I know in Australia, in pole circles there, splits are called spreadies. Spreadies, spread your legs, split your legs, that kind of thing. Now, depending on where we go, we can think that there's two families of splits, but then there's different manifestations of them based either on aesthetics or the split themselves or its function or what it takes part in. So the two families we have is the front split family or the strides family and the side split middle split family. Now, once again, there's no cohesive terminology, and some people say side split is X and middle split is Y, even though they could be the same, vice versa. And these kind of things, and you know, some of them call them, one split is called a middle split, one is called a Chinese split, and you know, it depends. Like, this is the thing, it depends on where you come from and what your group terminology and in-group terminology is for this. So for me, there is, as I said, there's two families. There's the stride family and the side split family, essentially. In the stride family, we have two main manifestations of the splits. We have square hips and the open hip variation. And depending on where you come from, it's very kind of interesting. It's like, you know, one of them is called right and one of them is called wrong. And one of them isn't right and other wrong. It comes down to function and aesthetics more so than anything else. So if we were to go in circus and gymnastics, then your split has to be with a square hip. And this is what gets you full points. Once again, it comes down to this full point and the rigidification of the body. And the function of that is to get a lot of hip extension as well. Then you would see this in rhythmic too, but then in rhythmic will also use everything. Let's just face it, they're so flexible, they need everything, and every tool in the box is used, so they also use an open one as well, depending on what they're doing, what moves they're doing, and the function and the goal and the objective. Then if we go into, say, ballet or martial arts, the split is generally turned out, and it's kind of interesting because in ballet, I remember asking one of the ballet teachers in circus school who was also an aerialist and also had performed in English National Ballet and all this, what was the difference between the two splits? Why did ballet turn out? Ballet is kind of interesting because in their split, they want to turn out so you get more of the front of the person facing the audience and it applies on these kind of curves, whereas in circus and other stuff, the split is more related to the back bend and other things, so then it's kind of square hip. Now, she obviously trained both of them, but it was kind of interesting to hear that, like, in ballet it was an aesthetic as much as anything else to get, like, the interesting thing, because if we think about ballet, it's a lot to do with body geometries and this kind of subtle, soft, but very strong aesthetic. If anyone's ever done ballet, if you've never done any ballet classes, you should do some ballet classes and just feel the burn. I can even remember my first introduction to static postures was in a ballet class where the teacher was just making us hold the arms up in, I don't even know the names of them now, but in these postures the whole time, and goddamn, it burnt. But then it was also, this is what you do in ballet, and it's kind of interesting when I kind of queried this, and she showed some performances afterwards and pointed out during the performance that there was a duet going on, and then the whole choir, the rest of the troupe, were standing behind in a kind of semicircle to frame them, and they're all either up on point or in various kind of poses, but they're all holding their hands up completely static for about 6 minutes of this solo, and then they moved. So it's kind of interesting to get that kind of combination strength going on. Anyway, we're getting off our topic of splits. So this kind of split has an aesthetic function. The other one that was pointed out in the open split in the dance and other contexts is because you open the hip out, your line is longer. And if you're on a stage, and a lot of the stages where stage production or ballet productions take place, it is a very big stage. They have very grand stages. It's not an intimate small venue generally, though sort of modern ballet and contemporary ballet and fusion styles would be in more smaller intimate venues. So it's kind of like to make you look as big as possible is another one of this. So it's like, oh, it's not a small person. You know, if we turn it out, we had, like, let's face it, like ballet tier flexibility, professional ballet tier, you're going to have the length of both legs and the width of the hips adding onto the line in that horizontal direction. The same thing if we think in the front split, if we lose that whole width of the hips and we only have the side profile of the hips, and then the torso, if you're in a perfectly square split, will be side on. And if you want to look at the audience of face, you can obviously turn the head, or you can also twist and rotate, and it can look challenging to get onto the profile. And you see this in aerial performance as well. It was kind of, I can remember one of the other teachers that who's like, you train the square split but you perform the side out one because it looks better. So there's kind of, once again, that keyword, it looks better. Then in martial arts context, we also would have the turned out split in terms to facilitate the side kicks and roundhouse kicks. If you remember my talk about Thomas Kurz, I think I mentioned that in there. So it's generally like, if we think about the split and where you come from, it's a function thing, and a lot of people will define one as good and bad based on its function more so than its chosen aesthetic. So it's kind of domain aesthetics. So then that's just kind of an overview. So in there we could say we have four splits, right, left, each side, and two different variations. In the middle split family, or the moving legs apart family, moving legs laterally or transversely, depending on where you go, we could also say that we have three splits in this. We would have a straddle split. A straddle split is if I was to sit on the floor on a pike, so I'd sit forward with my legs facing forward, and then keep my torso upright, and then pull the legs apart as wide as I can. Now, this is where a lot of arguments go in, is a wide straddle is not a split. I would hear that in a lot of circles, and I tend to agree with it a bit. It's closer to a pancake, but, you know, it's what we're getting at here. Different definitions. Once again, wide straddle is bad. Clear middle split is bad. Or clear middle split is bad. Or having your knees forward is bad. The other one we could think about would be the more one for, so I suppose my audience more familiar with, is the iso side split. If we look at the iso side split and if we look at the details on it, generally we'll see the knees will be rotated about 45 to 70 degrees depending on the person's hip capsule. So they won't be pointing up at the ceiling, they won't be pointing straight forward, and they will be pointing kind of diagonally. Now, I'm going to, just if you're if you're listening to the podcast, I'm going to put some pictures of all these into the video on YouTube, so you can check them out there. And obviously, titles and chapters will be matched, so you can see, you'll have clear pictures of what I'm talking about. Then we have the other kind of middle split. What I'd almost call the true middle split would be lying belly down. And what's kind of interesting on these splits is we're trying to get the legs in contact with the ground. All these ones are the split manifested in terms of the most amount of gravity assistance provided. And that's basically using the weight of the torso to force the legs apart in concert with gravity and the legs going apart, and some assistance from the shortening side of the joint. But this is the kind of the floor splits. And these would be the closed chain splits, would be another way to think about this, or the point of contacts on the feet type of splits. Whereas we have other splits. So sorry, just to sum this up. So we'd have three main types of splits in the middle split or side split or Chinese split family. And it's kind of interesting as well, like the Chinese split and terminology of it is, I'm not exactly certain where it comes from. I've heard it in gymnastics more so than anything else. And a lot of them would use that term for keeping the feet on the ground. So they'd still be doing the middle split, but then they'd be trying to keep the feet in this ground. And other people would say the Chinese split is the more, basically the ISO split would be that one, or that kind of alignment. So that's kind of an overview of the different types of splits. And well, this is the kind of thing, it's like some people would call a pancake split as well in some circles I've encountered. So, you know, it's kind of like splitting the legs apart, and there's very different ways of doing it. And that's kind of what I'm trying to get at, is that we can categorize them broadly. But then it's also like, say, if we go back to our open front split in martial arts circles, we could have a bent leg. You know, even if we go to a blues dance or swing dance or these kind of, blues, swing, other dances, you see it where they would do a split with a very bent leg that would almost be like a hurdler stretch, but not as quite. You'll see this one in martial arts as well, where they don't fully extend the back leg. They do a lot of points, but not, it mightn't be a coach thing. And I know some coaches will be, particularly kind of more display teams and more high kicking teams, will be quite keen on a straight leg to get kind of more aesthetic straight lines, because that's what we like, straight lines, and curved lines are considered bad. Whereas ones that are more geared towards function wouldn't mind having the back leg bent, because it's kind of replicates more the kicking position and gives a bit of ability to put a snap into it, I suppose, at the knee. So, you know, it's once again, what I'm trying to get at is, yes, form, function, and then aesthetics come from being repeated long enough that people can decide good, bad. And then function sometimes gets dropped based on the aesthetic demand, because a more functional split, something that would be translate better to your skills, might not be the exact split you'd have. So an example of this is you'd see this in more advanced rhythmic gymnastics in some teams, where if they're doing like illusion turns or punch spins or these kind of spins where they're doing a vertical front split and rotating around their foot on point, very advanced stuff, you will see a lot of people, to generate the momentum and to generate a stable axis, will want to turn the split out so the legs are vertically above each other rather than side by side. And this also makes it it's easier to get a bit more extension on this. Whereas the coaches would define an open split in some rhythmic schools, not all of them, as incorrect and only train the square hip one, obviously middle splits and all these splits as well. But then the function of the split would be turned out. And you see this as well in the dynamic jumping splits and other things, that the split in gymnastics, but this is the thing, rhythmic gymnastics, as far as I understand the scoring system, I'm open to being corrected on this now because it's very out of date with that kind of one, is an open split is acceptable on your jump splits and other stuff, whereas in artistic gymnastic, which we normally term as just gymnastics, the one we'd see in the Olympics with all the tumbling, a square split is needed in that one and will lose you marks if you're turned out. So even in gymnastics itself, there is some differences. There's many, this is the kind of thing, one of the things we do in the modern methods of mobility is, there's many ways to get the splits. And oh yeah, and then we have, I'll talk about that later, I'll talk about that in the other one actually. Sorry, excuse me, I was going to give some yoga things in the Hanuman Asana. The Hanuman Asana actually is kind of interesting in yoga, because when I was doing yoga very early in my life, so I had, when I was in primary school, so sort of age 4 to 12 in Ireland, from about 8 to 12, one of the parents in the school was a yoga teacher, she's still a yoga teacher, and when she would have us do Hanuman Asana, turning out was fine. It wasn't, you know, I can even remember her encouraging it, and even flying Hanuman Asana when someone's lifting you up. And I'm not certain if that's an actual yoga pose, but you know, it's for kids, so it's keeping it interesting. And she didn't care about turning out. In fact, she cued me once to turn out, because it would get me down more, because my hip wasn't flexible enough to get square enough at that age. And also it was very upright posture wanted versus a having too much tilt in the hips. Anyway, what was my point? So even in yoga you get this. Now if we look at getting the splits, this is kind of one of those things that's interesting, because like people will say, particularly depending on which circles you come from, you will be told there is different ways to get the splits. And what we do in the modern medicine mobility is we have just all the ways. Why say one's right? One will suit you better than others. Some people are obviously able to obtain it all through kind of relaxed passive stretching. I have an episode coming on that soon. And then other people will need more active techniques. The squarest and flattest my split has been after when I was doing all the kicking from martial arts. So that was really the stretch kicks and other stuff. So, you know, there's different ways to get them. And, you know, partner stretching methods, isometric methods, strength-based methods. But if we were to look at the most successful method, if we look at the greatest number of people who have achieved success, but also the least successful for the greatest number of people who have not achieved success in the splits, it would be the more relaxed methods. It's just a fact. Now, would they be, if we were to compare like for like in a controlled study, would one be better than the other? I'd almost say the strength stuff would probably be better and faster. But in terms of pure success, and in terms of actually number of people who've attained it and have had success with this method, that will be more successful. It's not to say the other ones aren't useful, but they definitely are. But, you know, we have to give credit where credit is due, even though it could be called passé or not in vogue, or depending which circles you're in. In getting the splits, it's one of the things I find very interesting, actually, is we have this idea of the benchmark standard of who has the splits and who is most flexible is little girl gymnasts. And generally, yes, they will, until they've had their first kind of growth spurt, the first kind of puberty growth spurt, then when the hips start to widen and other stuff, generally, yes, they will be the most flexible out of both men and women. Generally be stronger. Young girls are actually stronger than young boys up until boys can start getting their puberty-based growth spurts. That's something I learned from gymnastics, coaching gymnastics. It's quite a, yeah, just something to be aware of. Anyway, so with this thing, it's kind of interesting that like, oh, we think, we have this idea of like, we see these gymnasts, rhythmic, normal, artistic, display, whatever, cheerleading as well. And we think, oh, they're the most successful, the most flexible. Generally they are a group of the population that will be, but if we also go on YouTube and just look up get your splits tutorials or splits tutorials or splits in a day, there's probably the largest amount of tutorials for getting the splits or how to get the splits in one day, all this kind of shit, is geared towards young girl gymnasts. And it's kind of interesting because we think this, but having coached gymnastics for quite some time and circus for kids and other stuff, it's not. There's a lot of kids who are struggling with the splits and not that flexible. And once again, this is where things get interesting, because there is possibly only one method in the club or one way of doing it. These kids will get left behind in terms of development because they're not flexible enough to do the skills. Coaching focus goes towards the ones that respond well to the program. And they get selected. Whereas if we were to look at these kids, maybe they have the phenotype to develop splits in a more strength-based manner or more dynamic manner, all these other ways of developing splits that may be what they require. It's the other thing that it's particularly when you're taking part of team-based activities, there's generally just one program. Now, obviously, there's better coaches who will tailor things and have a game plan and adaptations for everyone. But at the lot of the time, like, as we know, you know, you can take a look at, say, classic yoga in a bigger group setting where they would have, you know, you just follow the flow of the class and, you know, classically the teacher's up the front demonstrating, you're following along, where, you know, better yoga teachers obviously are giving adjustments and refinements to poses and assistance, whatever, but not. The other kind of thing is when we think of the splits, in all kind of manners of the splits, is everyone always thinks it's very linear. And this is kind of one of the mistakes, I think, is we have to think that every time we do a movement, it is always a combination of our three planes of motion colliding or spiraling in one direction or spiraling in the other direction. And this is how we can think of the splits. We can think of like, oh, the front split is almost a replication of the walking gait. So as I'm posting on my lead leg, I'll be counter rotating to generate the spring to transfer the weight, blah, blah, blah. And in the splits, we have the same thing, particularly the square hip front split, where we want to square the hips. We try to square the hips. The torso is looking forward, but the hip is turned out maybe 20 degrees or 30 degrees or something like that. Whatever. Let's pull some numbers out of my ass here. And what we maybe need to do to generate the rest of that rotation is actually to rotate the chest towards the leg. I always have a rule of thumb on this that you can try out, is if you want to square your hips, you need to rotate the torso, the shoulders, or the eyes even, twice the direction, twice the amount of rotation that you need for the hip. So if I have 30 degrees of turnout, I want to rotate my shoulders 60 degrees towards the leg. There's also play in the lateral hamstring flexibility. But it's this idea. It's the same if I was sliding to a side split or a middle split from standing. The feet would be pointing forward. As they go out, they go laterally sideways. They would choke on the bone structure, would limit it. So then I would tilt the pelvis, start going backwards, and the legs would also externally rotate a certain amount. And then this would be what would be happening, once again, three planes of motion, going down, going back, and rotating. So you can see this happens in all the splits, whereas a lot of people, and I've done some of my most advanced wizardry for one-off clients and consults, is people just didn't have this concept and just giving the proper alignment to these movements. Once you find the alignment, and obviously there is textbook alignment, how we think it should be looking at based on our environment and previous training and our aesthetic choices and our demands of our activity. And then there is also how it should look based on your unique individual anatomy, which is very different. This is the kind of thing, it's like everyone can do a middle split, but everyone's middle split is going to look slightly different even when they're at their full depth. And, you know, differences like depending on population groups and selections of the activities is the thing. If we think about, say, gymnastics, obviously, people with a certain phenotype, certain bone structure and other stuff, weightlifting as well, every kind of sport on an elite level will kind of stream a certain phenotype to it. You're not going to see like a 5'2", 150, 160 tall basketball player in the NBA. It's the exact same in gymnastics. There it will be certain lever lengths and certain components and certain responses to training that people will be streamed towards. Just as an aside, I remember one of my clients, I think I told the story, maybe on Handstand Cast, but one of my clients in London who came to me and wanted to do a bit of acrobatics, a bit of handstands, a bit of tumbling, a bit of flexibility training. And she really wanted to do rhythmic gymnastics as a kid. And they went to a school in Russia that's obviously, Russia has a quite state-sponsored thing and is always kind of stream. They looked at the mother, and they basically looked at the mother and said, we're not taking you based on how your mother is because she was just the wrong shape. And it's like, you're just going to grow up like this. We don't want you because you're not going to be able to compete at the elite levels. Gone. So, you know, there is this bias, and this it feeds into our sense of aesthetics that all the people who have the same kind of body shape, body type, and morphology, we'll replicate a split very closely. So then we decide, oh, this is the correct way of doing a split in this discipline. Whereas my body type is not the same as this, therefore I'm doing it wrong, but whereas maybe it's perfectly adequate. A good example of this would be, say, if you, say you can sit in a nasty grass squat comfortably, a resting squat. If you ever get like 10, 15, 20 people around, we do this in the seminar sometimes to demonstrate. If we were to look at everyone's squat from the front, from the side, and from the back, and everyone who's capable of sitting, say, 10 minutes on a squat, everyone is obviously achieving the objective of sitting for 10 minutes in a squat, 15 minutes, 20, 30, 100 minutes, whatever you think is great, 5 minutes, even 1 minute, whatever. But everyone is going to have a slightly different squat. This is what I like about my seminars, is we get a big range of morphologies and flexibilities, so everyone gets to look at everyone and how it may look on a tall person, a short person, muscled, not so muscly, you know, all these kind of things. And you can see that the squat is always going to be subtly different. How much foot rotation, how much knees come in, do they have the knees coming up to the shoulders, or the knees splayed out to the side. A lot of these cues also will come from what a person has been told is a good squat. But when you're sitting in that 10 minutes, your body will tend to find the most efficient one for yourself. The same thing then goes for the middle splits, which is, we could almost say, there's a strong correlation between the squat, the horse stance, the middle split, with the lunge, the long lunge, and the front split, if we were to think about them in that way. I'm going to break all this down in the individual topic podcast, so don't worry about that if you're uncertain on this. So one of the things, I suppose, that feeds into the splits, that if we go back to our example of the gymnasts who don't have splits and have been doing it for 4 to 8 years, well, then we can also look at ourselves and our training and set realistic time frames for actually upgrading our flexibility. I think in 18 months, it takes 18 months to seriously upgrade your flexibility. Now, I also have four broad criteria. Three are general and one is specific. So for the general population who has no real propensity for one method of training or the other, and has no real propensity to being super flexible, or no connective tissue kind of things that allow them to be flexible, and roughly average joint structure. If we take like Mr. I can't touch my toes, I can't sit in a squat, and I can't bridge, is just this fantasy thing you've seen on the internet that is just not in your realm of existence. It will take this person about 18 months to go from like, okay, I can do a pretty good pike, it's not perfect, still has work to do, I can sit in a squat, I can, you know, bridge, you know, feet elevated bridge might be getting there, or, you know, arms are perfectly overhead now. These kind of flexibility benchmarks we might have. To take this person who now has a good pike, can sit on the floor with their legs spread but can't pancake, to go, okay, I can do splits, I can do middle splits, I can do a nice pancake, face to the floor, chest to the floor, I've got a bridge. It takes another 18 months. To then take this person who can do all the poses, because we have this weird transition that we first have to kind of, if we take someone who can't do anything, we have to kind of break them into pieces and train the pieces and find the weak links and blah, 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 and then put it back together. Once we put it back together into a movement that is accessible and doable, the movement itself becomes now the new foundation for the next level of flexibility development. The next level of flexibility development is essentially maxing out your flexibility potential. That will take another year and a half. And this is to get everything. Now, if we have these three broad categories, then to take, let's say, someone who has a more hypermobile phenotype, and to transition them into contortion would take another year and a half, 2 years. So you can see we have basically a 5-year development curve, and then another bonus year and a half, 2 years to get everything. Now, obviously this involves, like, we're talking in the everything context, in the contortion thing, we're talking about like triple fold, which is sitting your head with your legs tucked behind, and, you know, splits, massive oversplits, all this kind of things. So it takes a while. And generally in the split, you'll find that There's three subgroups in it. There's ones who front split comes easier. There's one who middle split comes easier. And then there's one where combined group where they both come just as easy. So generally finding out where you are, you're only really going to find this by either having someone do a very vigorous, intensive kind of bench assessment of all your joint capabilities and also knowing your training history and all this stuff. And then at the same time, you know, it's also we don't understand your own individual response to training. Now, another thing just to note on the 18 months is it generally most people are faster than 18 months to kind of reach the next kind of threshold. But 18 months kind of, it's one of those things I hate, is this whole thing of like, I'm not flexible. Generally, you have a very good high flexibility thing. You just have to experiment with methods to find what works for you and train them long enough so they manifest. So the experimentation phase may last a while. And, you know, then once you lock in on what works for you, then, you know, progress is obviously much faster. But at the same time, if we start telling ourselves bullshit, like, oh, I tried the stretch for 3 months and then I didn't get splits, where a person done this 28-day Instagram challenge of these 6 stretches and got completely flat from 40 centimeters, then, you know, then we begin to tell ourselves bullshit, like, I can't be flexible. This person got it so fast and I didn't do it. Therefore, I must not be a flexible person, blah. And, you know, yes, people get it faster. Maybe they just found the method that worked for them in this Instagram challenge and it was exactly what they needed at the time. Or maybe they just had a very high response, training response to this specific method. So we do have to bear that in mind. We can also begin to think about open chain splits. Like, if we are using the body, and the body is controlling the torso, let's say, is controlling the point of contact, or is the point of contact, or the hands are the point of contact, then moving the legs around is a very different type of flexibility demand and strength demand than if you were doing a split gravity driving. Once again, going back to our three vectors theories, or three relationships theories. And three planes of gravity, or three responses to gravity, blah, blah, blah. We've covered that in the other episodes. So we have this, these type of movements as well. Whereas this is where the more interesting thing of splits in, like, it's, you know, it's obviously cool to be able to do splits on things, but generally, like, if we look at the people we hold in the highest regard for flexibility, development, and usage and control of the body, it's generally all in open chain movements, or a large part of it is. We can think of pole dance, holding onto the pole, moving the legs around, doing flags, doing split flags, doing rainbow marchenkos, or that's a hybrid one. Obviously, it's a hybrid one. You know, we can think of aerialists, we can think of ballet, doing all their big split leaps, splits, leg lifts, tilts, punches, all this kind of stuff. Rhythmic gymnastics, the exact same. Gymnastics to a certain degree, though it's not as big a focus in artistic gymnastics. So, and martial arts as well. It's like, oh, splits on the ground is cool, but have you tried kicking someone in the face? Because that's what we do. We just kick people in faces all the time while they're standing there within, kicking range. Anyway. So this is kind of an overview of the splits. And there's one kind of nice test on the split where I haven't really implemented it, but I think this is kind of an interesting thing for you all to try out. You're finding your true split versus your warmed up split versus your I have trained for a while split, trained for a while in a training session, not a period of time. So the true split, and this goes, I got this from a podcast I was guest on. Your true split is what you can do cold, from a guy who's doing martial arts taekwondo. Your true split is what you can do cold in your street clothes on one exhale. So how far you can go into the split on one exhale in your street clothes and other stuff. Obviously it's taekwondo, so it's geared to kicking people in the face. That's your true split. And then if you need to stretch loads and warm up and other stuff, then you obviously have a higher operating, you have a higher warmed up operating range, but your day-to-day range is that. So I think that's kind of an interesting test and really got me thinking. It's like, oh, what is our true flexibility? What is embodied? And we can find, like, it will take a while from, like, we always think of, we have exercises in our program we do the exercises and we get more skillful at the exercises, so we get better at them and we go deeper. But then the exercise itself might not transfer directly to our bigger position. Let's say we're working on one component of the side split, say the short adductors, and we're using Taylor's pose, and we had a 15 centimeter drop in our Taylor's pose. Ideally, we would have a 15 centimeter drop in our splits to match that new increased short adductors, but maybe not. Maybe you've just gotten really good at doing this exercise and it'll take a while for it to become manifest in the split. That's fine. And once it manifests in the split, it will also take a while to go from nervous system related to the actual exercise and doing splits to a changing the spinal cord reflex, which takes a while. So this is one of the things to think about, is that, okay, cool, I can do a split flat, I can do a split holding weight, but then when I slide out, I get to 90 degrees, 110 degrees. Well, then that's my true split. That's what I've got. That's me as a normal human being. Training me is more flexible, better, and always points their toes and locks their knees and looks great. That's kind of an overview or something that's quite interesting, I think, to try out. Obviously, try it out. And that could be one of the ways you could track your progress. You could go, okay, I'm tracking progress in my splits via various methods. I'll talk about them in a second. And then I'm also tracking progress in normal life me by just trying a split at whim, you know, get up or have my coffee or walking the dog, or let's try to do a split on one exhale and see what I actually have, what's there in my pocket right now. So tracking the splits is kind of one of these things that's kind of easy yet not precise, that we can obviously measure the heel to heel distance in both of the families of splits. We can just measure that. We measure heel to heel, center to heel, or blah. Or we can also, one of the ways I like to measure is using a yoga block, and we can yoga block or foam block, and we can use the edges on it and turn the edges to their various lengths, and then put that as a contact point on the body. It's like, oh, I'm doing my front split and I do a yoga block and I put it at the back of my knee and I have to turn it sideways. And then I got more flexible, and then I turned the block to its narrower edge. And this is one of the ways I like as well, because it just gives you an idea. Or I'm using supports and I'm dropping down. And this way is a bit easier to do yourself using a block versus getting a measuring tape out and getting someone to do it. If you have friends or you're training in a club environment, then you do. If you listen to this podcast, you probably don't have friends, so you have to train by yourself in your room alone at night. You've got to figure out different ways of tracking it. You could also put some marks on the floor. But the other kind of thing is, like, we have to think, when we push in depth in the split, we also have to think of, like, I can push myself super deep, but what is my duration in reserve? Duration in reserve is similar to reps in reserve, that I could push myself really deep, but then my duration, it gets too much, and I have to come out like in 3 seconds. So my duration in reserve would be 3 seconds, whereas if I sit on the floor on a pancake, I go forward, and there, oh, my duration in reserve is 2 minutes. I could stay in that stretch for 2 minutes. So these are one of the ways to measure flexibility and to think about it. So it's like, oh, I push the depth in my split, but I also pick a duration in reserve zone. So I can hold the split for 20, 30, 40, 60 seconds at this depth. Okay, I can hold my side split, my iso side split. I can push the depth, but the isometric contraction is too hard, too heavy for myself, and I have to come out after 10 seconds. So I have a split that's 180 centimeters apart, but I only survive there for 10 seconds. So this is one of the ways to actually measure comfort or discomfort. The other method of tracking is like, oh, I go to a certain depth and I have to start retaining my breath. So I'm holding my breath, or it forces a contraction in the body to kind of tolerate the intensity of it. So this is, if you can breathe and talk calmly, is one of the key deciding factors for any skill, any kind of skill. And you see this occur in, like, everywhere, athletics, martial arts, whatever, speed bag, all these kind of things, boxing. If you can hold a conversation while doing the skill, even if it's pretty high intensity, then you're working very efficiently. So it's the same thing can apply to flexibility. It's like, obviously, some poses and other stuff thing, but we're talking about splits today. Some poses will limit your ability to breathing, particularly the back bend ones or the ones where you're sitting on your own head. But I'm not talking about them. But in our splits, if we are picking an intensity to measure, we can have our depth, our pure depth, the deepest we can go, but have to come out very quickly. We could have our deepest we can go and hold with a duration in reserve of 30 seconds, or the deepest we can go without making weird faces and being able to talk to the person who is measuring you, or, I don't know, if you have no friends, talk to your wall. Anyway, so you get this idea that there's actually different ways of measuring the depths in the splits. We'll talk about some more precise ones and other stuff for the actual split itself, or in the actual episodes, but it just gives you an idea of where we're getting at. Other than that, that's kind of been a rough presentation of the splits in terms of things. So we're talking about our two types of front splits, which gives us four different splits, our three types of middle splits, or two, and the pseudo type of the straddle split. And then we can talk about more precise alignments and the kind of requirements and the muscle groups involved in these splits themselves. Other than that, thank you for listening to me this week. I have been the splits wizard, Emmett Lewis. You've been listening to Bendability. If you want to check out online training with us, you can check out modernmobility.com. Look forward to some big announcements coming very soon.